right, we're back, we're live. I was just talking to our guest, Renin. He's going to be joining us in the next couple of minutes. He said he had an ice bath this morning. You know, I tested the temperature of my pool the other day. I've got one of those thermometers that you point and then it comes up on an LED screen. I used to use it in the laboratory. Anyway, this thing tells me that my pool was 6 or 7 degrees.
That's pretty close to zero.
But that's not as cold as what he was in.
Mm-mm.
Lunatic. All right. So here's some stuff that you also need to know this morning. And this is quite a big story. It's come up in the comments section already. But KwaZulu-Natal Police Commissioner General Nhlanhla Mqwanazi has made explosive allegations against senior SAPS leadership, claiming that the Deputy National Commissioner, Shadrach Sibiya, obstructed investigations into political assassinations and organized crime by stalling over 120 sensitive dockets. He also accused the police minister of protecting politically connected individuals, disbanding key task teams, and interfering in crime intelligence. These claims suggest deep-rooted political interference and possible collusion within the SAPS. So I don't know if you're aware of the story of General Nhlanhla Mqwanazi. He's the real thing.
Mm.
You know how you talk about those good cops, the cops who want to just root
out
all the bad guys, do the right thing, catch the criminals, put them in jail. The kind of cops that when you're a little boy, you decide, I want to be a policeman so I can get the baddies.
Make the world a better place.
And he's one of those guys.
Mm.
Everyone who knows him that I've spoken to, everyone who's ever dealt with him that I've read about, every single thing that has been said or written about this man in the media seems to indicate that he is the kind of person we need in South Africa. And he's saying some quite scary things about some very, very powerful and connected people. I certainly hope that he manages to win. I'd like to see a guy like this actually get into a position of power where he is in charge of the entire police force and he can start rinsing out all these blockages, these bad eggs, these bad people, and cleaning up the police so that they can look after us. We pay for the police. You pay for it with your tax money. There are so many people in this country who either have no respect for the police.
Yeah, or don't even utilize them to their
no, I mean, full capacity. You probably would call
private companies.
You'd probably call your private security before you'd call the police. And we don't trust them. And we know that they are filled up to the brim with corrupt and just incompetent people.
Mm.
But there are guys like this. And please believe me, he seems to me, he seems like he's the real thing. Nhlanhla Mqwanazi. So good luck to you, dude. And strength to you. Yeah. You're going to need it. He's got some big targets there that he's talking about. And I sincerely hope he manages. Again, he's probably not going to get any support from the president or any of those, because the president can hardly support his own agenda at the moment, let alone someone who's trying to do their job. But let's see. Maybe it'll happen. And then you have news on, this is very important information, everybody. The latest emoji on your phone. This is the kind of shit that can sink ships, okay? It can launch wars. This is a bigger story than Iran and Israel. This is the most important thing. And you think I'm kidding, but for some young people in this world,
they look
the latest emoji is way more important than whatever's going with tariffs or international peace or war. So what is it?
For me, it's always, and I picked up on it again because of getting a new phone and just everything.
Are you emotional? Are you crying about this emoji?
I'm doing the crying emoji.
Okay, yeah. All right. What's this latest emoji?
But for
have
me,
they finally given us an actual dick and tits?
Well, I was going to say the first thing I look for is something rude.
Yeah.
Now, I've said that it's the latest emoji, but the plural of emoji is?
Emojis.
No, it's emoji.
Oh.
So the latest.
So one emoji, many emoji. Okay. Oh, so you've got a whole bunch.
There are 8
Have they
ones.
Got us a pair of tits and a dick yet? Or
I
do we still have to use those stupid
make
vegetables?
Something up with this. There's another vegetable.
Okay. What's the new vegetable?
Do we have them?
James, please put them up. This is massive. This is breaking news.
You would have seen these already. It's not breaking news.
Oh, really? Are these already out there?
Look, I've seen one of them. I noticed the top left one.
All right. So what do we got? Like, what's that for?
That's like a sad, tired, had no sleep face.
Right. Then a fingerprint.
Fingerprint for fingerprint ID.
Okay.
Splotch. The radish. So there's your vegetable
radish.
And do something with.
Can't really do, you can't do a rude body part with a radish, hey? Any ideas, anybody?
Maybe it's a boob with a nipple cap.
No, I don't like it.
A butt plug. But
that could be it does come, maybe a bit butt pluggy.
You've got a tree with no leaves.
A winter tree.
A winter tree. Okay. A harp.
A harp. So the Irish will like that.
Yes, a shovel and then a flag. And
that's the English flag, but it's missing a lion. So as a vexillologist and a person qualified in heraldry, I have a problem with that flag because it has two lions. You need to have three.
So there's no world is there a place, an instance that would be used with two lions.
Only if you were it would probably be pre-Henry the First. So we're talking like in 1100 when the Norman coat of arms from northern France, where William the Conqueror came from when he conquered England in 1066 at the Battle of Hastings, he would have probably carried two lions because the Normans had two lions, the Dukes of Aquitaine had one like that, and then England took three.
Well, you know what? 1100s called and they wanted that emoji.
So someone's very particular about using the Angevin Norman English arms with the cross of St. George. It's a strange combo. Okay,
or
there
someone
we go.
Fucked up.
So I think someone screwed up. That's more likely. I don't think they exactly have someone who's qualified in heraldry making their emojis. Although, I will tell you, heraldry used to be the language that probably first used these kinds of pictures to communicate very complicated things across vast distances and in the fog of war. So maybe they should hire someone who's got a bit of heraldic background because they would do very well to make symbols, which are the language of heraldry, that much clearer and more useful to people. So is that it? Those are the only ones?
Those are them. So the only one that you can really kind of be rude with is the splash.
The radish. We turned it into a butt plug. Are you kidding? We can do anything on this show.
Or the splash. If
what
you use
would
it
the
in conjunction with, like imagine aubergine splash.
Okay. I don't know why then. It's just, you know, maybe there's a way that Apple can tell if it's an adult or a child using it. And frankly, children are going to work it out anyway. But like, we've got to have a pair of tits and a dick at some point. Don't we? It's so stupid and childish that we can't use these things.
We have a middle finger.
We have a middle finger, which is basically fuck you. We've got that, but we don't have a dick or
okay,
a pair of titties.
On. I've got information on this flag.
Okay, go.
It's called the Flag of Sark. Exceptionally reserved ISO 3166 code for the Sark, which may show as the letters CQ on some platforms. The Flag for Sark was the first flag emoji sequence using two-letter ISO codes. This is like a weird coding thing.
It's a flag like naval signaling
combining regional indicator symbol letter C and regional indicator symbol letter Q. What does it mean to anybody?
Oh yeah. Okay, I thought my explanation
I'll take
was
radish
more fun.
Splish.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There we go. Very important, everybody. The latest emoji, which is plural,
yes,
on your phone. All right. So let's go from emojis to the real. I mean, we may be talking about Gen Z already without knowing it, but let's talk about something even more exciting and important. Bring Ronin in here, James. Let this man come and sit down. I love this guy. I had. When did we have lunch last year?
This year.
This year. Okay, good. Always good to see him. Smart guy, except with his stupid. There we go. Just walk right in front of the camera. It's fine. Except for the stupid ice bath thing. You've always impressed me. You're ahead of the curve. He's a very, very smart man. Got decades of experience connecting brands to young audiences. He started Student Village and is the CEO, South Africa's premier youth marketing agency. And he led the creation of the Gen Z Economy Report, which he's going to tell us about today. So you'll hear it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Although I suspect Ewan Bronwyn from Flux Trends discussed it on her BizTrends show not so long ago in this very studio.
Correct, but I think Bronwyn took things on the Bronwyn tangent.
Yeah, she gets very academic about some of it, right?
Yes, I think but we're going to get real today.
Okay, so I want to know, first of all, how are you?
I'm really
You're looking well. You don't change at all.
Thank you.
No.
Well, I'm turning 50 soon.
Shit. Okay, but the ice baths are helping?
Makes me feel 25 inside.
All right. So let's talk about this Gen Z economy report. First of all, why did you decide to do it? Because we're all fascinated by Gen Z, but who actually has the time to study these people?
Yes, I think firstly, it's our business. So we need to be on the pulse of things. And so we do this kind of research every year. And being in this kind of business for over 25 years, I've always been fascinated about the human condition and how people and generations change over time. So if you think of me, I'm in that nexus of people that are between 18 and 25 years old. And for 25 years, I've been seeing cohorts come through.
Right. So what have you noticed? I mean, overall, what are the big trends before we get into the Gen Z economy report? But what has changed from when we were that old?
Well, if you think about it, when we were that old, the world seemed to be like a friendlier place. Things seemed to be easy. We didn't have much access to information. We had a really, decent-ish life. Things were like kind of fun. And this cohort is really like living in a world that is on fire. So in flux and on fire. So they haven't known a really good world. And
they're full of shit, though, because we were living at the end of the Cold War, for God's sake. And things were all changing at rapid paces around us. There was instability. There was a lot of chaos in the world when we were growing up. But I think we were raised in a smaller world in some ways. I don't know if it was worse. I think they have less to complain about, if you ask me.
Yeah, so I actually look at it a different way because they're so hyper-connected that they're so connected to everything that is happening in the world. We knew what was happening kind of around us.
Right.
Where, say, if you're following a war, you can get an alert every 30 seconds about something that's happening in another country.
Okay, that's true.
That has nothing to do with you, and it keeps you in this hyper state of almost PTSD. But if we get to this generation and we kind of compare them to the ones before, what I really see is like if you buy a new device, what you usually get is new features and new upgrades and maybe some bug fixes. So I know you had a lot to say about millennials before, mm-hmm. and it was all about I. Mm-hmm. So this generation I see is actually nicer.
Are they?
And it's I and we.
Okay.
So millennial was more about, it's all about me.
So are we agreed then at least that the millennials were the worst generation?
They were one of the toughest.
Okay. Renin's much more polite than I am. Okay, so let's talk about these guys because, I mean, we've had it with the millennials. Who wants to talk about them? Let's discuss how these young people see the world, how they participate in the economy, and maybe for starters, you can tell us why a report like this is important for us. For people who are listening to this now going, I don't want to hire these people. I don't deal with generational stuff. Why would it be important and valuable to me? I mean, that may be the myopic view of some people. Why would Gen Z matter to everyone?
So if you just look at the numbers, so in South Africa, if we're 60-odd million people, those that fit into Gen Z are 27 million people.
Almost half.
So my question is, can you afford to ignore them?
Yeah.
So if you look at them, they're from early teens right through to the age of 30. So they're in your business. It's not like this wave that's coming. They're already arriving at the door or they're already in there. And they just look at things very, very differently.
Okay. So how do they look at the world and how do they look at the economy?
So they're hyper-connected. So like I said before, they're tech natives. They're born in a world where they don't know analog. They don't know test patterns on TV screens. They don't even watch TV screens.
Yeah, exactly.
So So they exist. They're quite happy both in the real world and the virtual world, and they are, how do I say, they've come into a world that's really tough, but they come in with a different kind of attitude, and this attitude is more like, I'm going to make a plan.
Okay, that's good.
And so it's amazing. So they're positively charged. They're using technology and they're smart to really make it happen. And they're really savvy and discerning when it comes to what they spend on. And that's where things get really, really interesting.
So far, what's not to like, right? I mean, Leanne, do you feel that, because you work with a couple of Gen Z people, and obviously this survey is more empirical. Please pick that microphone up. It's so embarrassing. It's done between your tits.
I've tried.
It's almost an emoji.
I've tried, but it needs Viagra.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so I think the biggest things for me are I'm picking up that Gen Z almost has a better work ethic than millennials had. And I think it might be because, and now I'm putting it together, millennials were very much I, and it might be this thing that you're saying about Gen Z being I and we and making a plan.
Yeah, so if you look at this generation, they're like natural born hustlers.
Uh-huh.
So they know they need to make a plan.
Right.
So if you look at where they're getting their money from, the highest ranked item was side hustles.
Hmm.
Then parents, then government. And parents equals like it could be mothers, lovers, brothers. You know, it's a whole chain of people that you know. And then government and grants and stuff like that. So one is the nature of Gen Zs are changing. So even if you go to universities, so if you think about when you went to universities, potentially it was seen as a place of privilege and you needed lots of money to be there. But mm-hmm. but now most students are funded by the government. So the nature of what universities even look like these days is very different. So what you're seeing is in terms of the generation that's making things happen is that they're just taking things into their own hands. And it's kind of like I look at the parable of the boom gate. So the other day I went to Mill Park Hospital, came out, and there's a guy at the boom with a parking ticket. When was the last time you went to a place that had a boom?
With
a guy
actual,
at the boom,
yeah.
It says 12 rand. And then you get into this.
I'll tell you where. The only other place I've been to that's like that is the SABC.
Yeah. and then he says 12 rand and you've got 50 and I don't have change.
Yeah.
And then you get into
right.
that whole thing.
What a nightmare.
So that's like 1.0. Then you go down the road to a shopping center and there's now a machine and you feed the machine. That could be the next generation.
Right.
And now when you go to Santon and...
You have an app on your phone that puts it up automatically.
Yeah. And that's how I see the iterations of how these generations are happening. Are they working harder? If I was a company, I'd be very worried about this generation coming in. For simple reason is that they see their side hustle as their passion.
Right.
They're wanting it to get steam. So they actually want their side hustle to be the gig.
So if you're their boss, they're only doing what they have to get paid.
Exactly. So that's right. their hedge and that's their security. And they want to make sure as their side hustle gets steam, they're out of there.
Mm.
Okay. How are things like banking and retail and telecoms changing with the Gen Z approach?
So a good question is this generation loyal?
No.
No. Not by design, but maybe by convenience. So of the people we surveyed, 99% people say they have loyalty cards and multiple loyalty cards. How many?
Which are all loaded on their phone, obviously.
Yeah. How many of them said, are they loyal? Zero. And really, what you're seeing here is a generation that is all about convenience. They're transactional.
Mm-hmm.
So bank accounts. When we were at Varsity, we either came in with a bank account or we opened a bank account.
I'm still with the same bank that I started with because
too.
It's just too much of a schlep to move.
Exactly.
These guys are not like that.
Yeah. So
if they find out this one's slightly cheaper or gives them better rates on something, they're out.
Yeah, but it gets even more interesting. So most of the students, almost probably about 55% have between 1 and 3 bank accounts.
Huh. Wow.
Which is interesting. Like if you look deeper, like on the one side they're saying, well, if I'm getting money from my sponsor, they're using that bank, so I want a direct transfer, so I want it that way, and I get it directly. And if they're getting multiple income sources, so they want multiple bank accounts, they also say it's a hedge against crime. So people can't steal from just I'm spreading my eggs.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The main thing.
Okay.
And then the other interesting thing is we see, even though they've got 3 bank accounts, 80% of them are still using cash. So now you have tech natives.
Wow. Using cash.
So this is definitely like a legacy of things that haven't quite corrected. Some of the bugs haven't been fixed in this generation because it's probably something that they learned from their parents or their aunties and uncle. Go straight to the ATM machine as the money lands, draw it all out,
right.
Hide it under your bed.
Okay.
And I think things will self-correct in the next year or two as you see things like PayShap, which most banks, you know, you can pay someone to their account via their phone,
right.
And it's either free or a rand for something between 100 and 200 rand. So students are doing this as they see it as spread my risk with multiple banks, draw out my money so no one can steal it, and that means people debit orders and all of that kind of thing. So they want that control, and there are no fees for using cash. So as the environment changes where it's zero to no fees, I think we're going to be cashless in the next few years.
You talk about the side hustles. What kinds of side hustles are people in South Africa of this age group trying to do?
I want to be an influencer.
Is that what they want to do? They want to be influencers?
So let's start there. So a few years ago, and this is right around the world. Well, since I've been in for 25 years in this business, every year, every graduate recruiter and around the world, every association surveys hundreds of companies. And what's the top company that people want to work for around the world? Yes.
Company to work for.
Is it one of the big Silicon Valley companies?
Google? Google or?
Correct.
Yeah.
Does Google hire that many interns?
And just by the way, I've been to Google. I think you have too.
I work on the floor beneath them.
Okay, no, but I mean the one in America.
Oh.
The proper head office, right? Palo Alto.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's like any other office. I hate to break it to you, but they may have a couple of bean bags and fancy colors. They might have little booths that you can go in to have a 20-minute power nap. They might have more on the restaurant menu where you go every day for lunch, but it's pretty much like every other office.
And so what's interesting is in people's minds, they manage to capture this attention where this is the destination you want to work at. In South Africa, I don't think they have a grad program, but for many years, Google was ranked number one. And over the last few years, influencer went up into the top three. So what they're basically saying is, I don't want to work for a company. I want to work for me.
That's a big difference between them and the millennials, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what we've seen over time is that, and this comes through in our research hugely, and this is where brands need to pay attention, is that they spend so much on their personal identity. So how they appear is they projecting the best version of themselves online. They're spending a huge amount on clothes, cosmetics, shoes, like an untold fortune because they're investing in their brand. Their brand is themselves and how they look and how they appear grows their following, grows their influence and will open doors. So that's one kind of hustle.
Mm. If I can just carry on that one for a little bit. I see it all the time because I'm in digital marketing, largely social media and for big cosmetics companies. So obviously I'm dealing with, I want to be an influencer every single day. And my core function is to deal with what are we going to do with all of these applicants? What are we going to do with the people who are influencers? Do we create squads of them for each beauty brand. You know, it's so it fills up a lot of my day.
Sounds fucking awful, if you ask me.
So you need a tech solution for that. So I'm just going to drop that in there, yeah. But they are available. But.
So we've actually created our own. So we now have a massive database of not only influencers, but content creators as well. Yeah. Those who aren't necessarily forward-facing.
Let me just ask you both. If everybody is trying to be an influencer, who the fuck are they influencing?
What I wanted to say is an influencer in our minds as Gen X or millennial is, that person is a football player or a soap opera star, or they're a radio presenter, and through that they've garnered followers and now they are influencers. I want to be an influencer is a weird question in my head. You're supposed to first build yourself up and then you can be an influencer. They've twigged onto that now. And so that's what they're doing. They're literally building these characters of themselves, not because they were humanitarians or football players. They're just becoming an influencer.
Yeah. So I think the old way of looking
at fake it till you make it.
Yes.
Kind of,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The old way of looking at influencing is you become a superstar in something,
yeah.
And because of that you have influence and resonance.
Exactly.
Right now, it's all about these small tribes, right?
They work together as well.
So you build up these nano and micro influencer networks, and each of them might have a smaller audience, but the key difference...
But does it have durability? I mean, this is where I'm curious, because obviously the data's not all in on this. We're entering a new era, and I like the way you both describe and define this stuff to me, but I wonder about how substantial it is, because sure, you can influence and do some work for a brand over a period of like a few months and maybe drive some results. But because your network is small and because you don't have a whole lot of substance, you're faking it till you make it.
You're also becoming...
Doesn't it run out after a short while?
You're becoming a brand slut, right?
But you're becoming a brand slut, but you also... There isn't a lot of fuel in the tank for this to become a proper job for the rest of the decade. You're going to have to find other things to do.
I'm going to answer this in a totally different way. So this is what I see, call it from the back end.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is people with anywhere from 10 to 50,000 followers. And the big thing you've got to crack with Gen Z is trust. And so in our research, Gen Z will trust 2/3, either their family, their friends, or people they know of influence.
Okay.
And only 30% celeb endorse.
Right.
So they're seeing that the brand sluts are the celebs in their eyes.
Oh, wow.
And people they know or one degree away from are people they trust. And what we see when we work with brands and we go to these micro nano influencers, it's not like 10 years ago you said, I've got this alcohol brand. Would you like to work with it? The answer would be yes, like a month ago. Now if you go to them and say, I'm more into health and wellness. I don't think it's going to suit my image. And they're almost casting you in their movie. And they're not just saying yes to everything. Yep.
Well, then I must be Gen Z because I've always thought celebrities were brand sluts too. So yeah, I kind of agree with them. I identify with them. Okay, so here's something interesting from Dirk. He says, our employee contracts allow employees to side hustle as long as their KPIs are met. We've had to incorporate this because of Gen Z. So it's already happening in companies, which is interesting. They would fix the problems faster than sleepy old politicians, says Pumlani. Probably a good idea too. I've noticed they do work in groups, says Khomotso.
They do work in groups. Oh, you'll see if you have a big event, for instance, a launch event that you've invited certain influencers to.
Right.
Not only do they pitch up in their groups physically and know each other, but online they provide support to each other. In their groups.
Yeah, it's like this hive mentality where they echolocate each other.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing when you bring up companies that I would be really careful about if I was a business owner is that there are two key things that drive this generation. One is authenticity. I want to be free to be me and I want to be able to express it. That doesn't really get in the way of how I arrive at work, unless it's the way I want to dress or the way I want to be or identify. But the big thing is flexibility. Flexibility is everything, not in just the future of work. So they're thinking, why would you want me to come here from 8 to 5 where I could run my world from the couch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the leftovers from the millennials where they were whining about that. But
yeah.
These guys actually don't want to be there. And
okay, but Renan, I mean, you run a business, number of businesses. Leanne is in charge of all these influencers, for example, in her company. I've got this business to run. We've all got stuff to do. And the reality is authenticity and being able to be your authentic self is also an earned privilege. Like, you have to be there for a while before you can start deciding that you will and won't do certain things and that you are and aren't certain things. And same with the flexibility. You want flexibility, you want authenticity, but sometimes we're actually just looking for someone to fill a job. And maybe you're not it, then someone else will be, so you miss your opportunity. And we all, even me, I think I've been fairly authentic my whole life. There were times where I had to do what needed to be done, and it had nothing to do with what I wanted.
Absolutely. So if you see this generation as helping the world to rewire into different ways, even your comment there suggests that you and I come from another world.
Yeah, we do.
Because
realistic fucking world.
Yeah.
And this the is, old man's back. Yeah, he's stepping in, yeah. He's creeping in.
Okay, let's tell grumpy old man something. So in terms of the flexibility is like, they're thinking like, why should I be there the whole day? And
I kind of get that.
Yeah.
And I'm sympathetic to that.
Yeah, I don't want a clock watch when I'm finished. I'm
it's done. Just that I know for a fact that someone who says to me, no, I don't need to be on your clock all the time, I guarantee you they're not at home working.
Okay. Definitely.
Cause, and they will say to themselves, I can be responsible and I'm very organized and disciplined and I can make this happen. And then they wake up at 10.
I hear you.
You know, you said you would message me at 8:30 this morning, Gen Z kid. Where the fuck's my message? Oh, no, I only woke up at 10. Okay, well, this work from home thing's not working, is it?
Yeah. And, well, I think it's side hustle day. Work from home. And what I'm also seeing is, you know, we come from a world where mastery was really recognized as a thing. So deepen your knowledge on a subject, sure, and your experience.
What are I'm they more generalists?
Yeah. What I'm seeing with this generation, they want a tick box. I can do this. Okay, find me another challenge. Find me another challenge. Mm. I'm trying to necessarily deepen their craft. And I think that's something we need to teach them. Because they see it like a game. Okay, I want to go to the next level. I can do this.
Right.
Tick.
Gotcha.
I can make a sale. Let me go to the next one. Tick.
100%. I'm seeing that, enjoying checklists, getting through things quickly.
Just give me a challenge or I'm bored. Give me a challenge.
Okay, so what can I do next?
Let's give them some credit now, because we've moaned a little bit, but I think it's also worth, there are definitely green shoots with Gen Z. I mean, the positivity thing is something that you both indicated at. I believe they're saving money instead of 100%. Just spending money. Mm. You know, it's been very consumer driven in the past couple of generations. I think these guys are actually putting away a lot of what they bring in.
Yeah. So now I'm going to blend in a few of the answers. So if I had to say that basics are the new luxuries, because the rise of food prices and the cost of living, they're spending almost $2,500 a month on groceries. Now, if you're earning somewhere between $3,500 and $5,000 a month, you're spending most of your money on groceries. Obviously, every month's different. So they're fickle. So if they want to put their money somewhere or do something or go to a festival or travel, you know, they'll just eat less or they'll make up in other parts. So South Africans are notoriously bad savers, as you know. So if they're only earning between $4,000 and $5,000 a month and they're saving $1,800, you've got to ask, well, what are they saving on and why? What's created this behavior? So one is they're credit averse because they've seen their families and friends burn with credit. So 5 years ago, we would have been talking how badly everyone's been burnt by credit and credit lenders and all of that are irresponsible. They're now using buy now, pay later. They don't. Only 16% have credit cards, which is a massive change.
That's interesting, huh?
Massive change. The rest are on debit cards and obviously drawing cash. But we're seeing them behave very differently. So back to the side hustles. They're seeing betting apps as a side hustle. 30% are investing in cryptos, and they think they're credit shy, but they're okay with a bit of risk.
Okay, that's very interesting. Are these people starting their own thing? When you say side hustles, what stuff really interests them aside from the influencer stuff? You mentioned the betting things. What kind of part of the economy do they want to occupy? What's the exciting, sexy stuff for them? Business exciting for them?
Definitely. So to start off, you always see the usual. So I've been a judge on some entrepreneurial competitions. Mm-hmm. So the first entries that come in, like you would get influencers. How do you sift them out? When you get like MH Holdings, and underneath there's a cleaning company or a security company, you know, this is the birth of tenderpreneurs. Then you have the comrades in the SRC, right, who's actually funding it. And that's the old school, right?
Right.
Let me tell you what's coming that's so super exciting. It's like I saw one recently where someone in Mpumalanga at Mpumalanga University has decided, you know, you can't get Uber Eats and you can't get Takealot deliveries in that area. It's too remote and all of that. So decided to create an app called Smart Delivery, mm-hmm, where you can either get lifts or get deliveries of stuff like stationery or anything just in these remote areas, and has created an app for areas that don't, for underserviced areas. So what you see is, with the use of technology, and I'll give you another example, is this word democratizing.
Okay.
So everyone needs to be able to get these kind of services, whether it's AI, whether it's delivery services. I saw another one which some young girl in the Vol created this. She wanted to deal with food waste from fast food chains and people who don't have meals. So she 3D printed coupons. She sells coupons for cheap, and people can buy these coupons and go to these fast food restaurants and buy food before it expires. So people are really thinking on this, taking technology and seeing how they can scale things. I mean, when we wanted to learn about AI in our business, we brought in a 19-year-old who's now developed. He'll explain to you what you need, kind of thing. And that's what makes me excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, good. I do want to go back to criticizing them a little bit, though, because I don't know whether it's their fault, but it's going to be very hard for these Gen Z guys and girls to be able to afford their own place. So a lot of them are going to rent for most of their lives. I don't know what the average age now for people's first property is, but I don't know whether Gen Z even have hope that they'll own a place one day. And property is a big deal because it's the first step in terms of generating real wealth. And once you own the place you live, you have a security that you don't have otherwise. The other problem is, of course, that they all dream of travel and all of this kind of thing, but it's becoming more expensive to do that sort of stuff. And if you're on a small salary and you're side hustling your backside off, there is also only so much that your money will get you. How are they spending what little they have? You mentioned food already, but I think transport's a big part of that too. And where do they live? Are they going to stay in mom and dad's basement until they're 40?
So it's interesting when you survey those that stay at home, which are the lucky few, it's like, where do you get your groceries? Well, the fridge is always full.
No, right. In other
mom
words,
makes me lunch when she makes her
and
own.
And you probably find those parents have also paid a bit of petrol money or whatever else as well. So those are the lucky people.
That's the lucky few. When you look at the rest, you know, what I'm seeing is people – the word ownership doesn't really feature as much.
I don't care about
because
that.
I think they've realized in many ways, firstly, they want flexibility. Flexibility comes in product, and they want to rent more than they own. So even cars, when you go to university, there's so few less cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like in our days, you know, the GTRs and the VWs and all that, and the Mags.
Sure.
And all that.
Right.
That doesn't exist as much anymore. They're hand-me-downs, but it's more they realize that things have become expensive. What are they actually saving for is rainy days. 25% are rainy days, and they're my next purchase. So rainy days could be my rainy day or my family's rainy day. So it's become a Ubuntu-style kind of, you know, I know there's going to be a rainy day, not this week, next week, or something. But what you're really seeing is around this renting is not even they don't even talk of having a house anymore. It was always, I want to buy my mother a house. I want to help restore things in my community. But everything now is they want flexibility. I want flexibility in my banking product, in my telco products. I don't want to sign a contract. I just want, that's why they also have, it's become a Tinder economy where you've got multiple partners. So I've got this guy for data, this one for this, this one for social. I want choice. I want flexibility. And I'm loyal as long as it suits me, not you. I'm loyal by convenience, not by design.
I think this is fascinating. I mean, I don't think that it's going to be an easy transition for the market the way that it is now, or for the market that the Gen Z guys and girls want, because they're quite different things. And I think there's still a lot of old school thinking being applied to fairly new school ways of dealing with stuff. I don't know what's going to win, but I kind of like the sound of the Gen Z crew. I think they sound a lot more switched on. They sound like they've got very distinct priorities and clear lines, and they're going to get their way. Even if it's only because there are more of them.
Yeah, there's more of them. And
also remember, they were raised predominantly by Gen X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes them very scary.
So if they've been raised by a Gen Xer, then I have a lot of faith.
Shade says half of Gen Z don't even know how to start a car. Well, probably because they don't need to. The construction mafia is now even a threat to small general contractors in the private sector and areas outside the metros. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about, Jody. I mean, you know, I'm wearing, you know, white socks today. Fucking exciting concept, but it's not what we're talking about. I really have to train these. You know, I sometimes think our audience is so clever, and sometimes I think they're so stupid. And then, you know, when I'm thinking they're clever, Jody comes and ruins it with a comment like that. Dirk says, the situation in Australia might be slightly different. You're already getting priced out of the property market at a young age, regardless of how you wanted to maybe invest in things.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So in South Africa, what are the things they care about outside of the economy? Are they hugely into politics? Are they hugely into religion? Are they hugely into family? Are they hugely into going out and drinking? I mean, I've heard interesting things about how they don't really drink or do drugs. They want to be healthy.
So there's been this huge shift in terms of wellness. Remember, they're the generation that sort of outed mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So they became very comfortable about talking about mental health and mental health issues. Yeah. I think they've also taken things a bit too far. So with the internet, like, they now wear their labels. I'm anxious, I'm depressed,
yeah.
I'm this, I'm OCD. Yeah, so it's almost like they were.
I'm on these seven different medicines, yeah. So don't contact me before 10 o'clock at night. Yeah.
So they kind of label their mental health issues just like pronouns. And but it's been very good because now we can talk about these things. Mm. What we're seeing in terms of the social sphere is how they're very social, so they're very family-orientated and friends-orientated. They don't spend enough time together because they're locked on their screens for so long.
Is their virtual self almost more important than their real self?
Yeah, so for them it's so fluid. For us it's like still separate. For them it's so fluid, and they don't realize mental health is such a big issue, but they don't realize what they're feeding their mind.
Mm-hmm. By being online the whole time.
Yeah, so they're feeding their bodies better. And you know, like Woolies is seen as a payday treat. and how they appear. So they'll go to a shopping center or fancy restaurants once a month or twice a month to look good, yeah. have some new content.
To impress strangers.
Yes. And the same is when they go out, is that they are generally drinking less. They'll drink much cheaper at home when no one's looking.
So is it because they can't afford it? This is not necessarily because they don't want to drink.
It's a bit of both.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they are tending towards the healthier side of the alcohol market, so the light beers and all of that. But what we're seeing is very interesting, and you might know from your influencer space, is payday weekend is when they literally blow 80% of what they have, and they will go wow. literally spastic. And when it
like
comes
a mine
to,
worker on payday.
Yeah. And when they've learned from the best, and when right. and when it comes when it comes to things like popping bottles, they're now renting bottles.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
now you don't have to drink. You know, if it's not really going that well, you rent, you take the pictures, you pretend it's all going well, then return the bottles and go home because it
must
it's
be so self-defeating. Can you imagine the feeling of getting back in the Uber after you've pretended to have a big night out with your friends and you've rented a bottle of champagne that costs 4,000 rand but you didn't open it, and then you get back in the Uber sober as a judge
and alone
back to your shitty life? How depressing.
Yeah.
No, I'm ridiculous. So glad I'm not in Gen Z. Actually, I've changed my mind. They were doing really well for a minute there. No, that's just shit. Oh, that's horrible. That's super interesting. So lots of people in here saying that you're teaching them all kinds of things. I find them to be selfish at times, says Khomotso. Well, that's probably that individuality, the authenticity, the flexibility.
Yeah, and they're unapologetic about their views. They're unapologetic about them being themselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's I and we. First me and we.
And let's also be fair that when you're at that age, if you're under the age of 25, where the majority of this age group is, you do only think of yourself because that's all there is for you yeah. to think about. After that, maybe family and friends, and then beyond that,
boyfriends,
other groups of
people. Boyfriends and yeah, girlfriends sure. and partners. Is
and that's normal. Yeah. So let's not regard them as being particularly evil or good. Shade says, won't being on technology all the time and half being raised by screens to keep kids quiet because social anxiety outside the house and influencer groups. I don't know where that sentence ends, but okay. Maybe even speech problems when they're young. Well, I've noticed a couple of things. I don't think this really goes to your study, but I'd love your remarks on it anyway. I've noticed that making eye contact is difficult for a lot of people under the age of 30 in South Africa, but also in the rest of the world, because we're not very different to anywhere else in the world. In that respect, I find also that reading and understanding body language is for these people difficult because they don't have as much real-world communication as we used to. And their language tends to be kind of simplified. They're using less words. Maybe that's a good thing to communicate more. See, fewer words. Thank you, Leanne. Fewer words to communicate more. And they struggle to speak to strangers. It's quite intimidating, social anxiety or whatever yeah. it is, right? These are real problems that Gen Z is going to have to confront if it wants to go into business, because the only way you do business is by networks, connections, meeting people, talking to people. You have to be able to do that stuff. You can't use AI to do that for you. Not yet.
I've witnessed people physically freeze up when their phone rings. And it's and it's a client.
Yeah, but I'm kind of getting like that too. So
I mean, who phones anymore?
Exactly,
anyway?
Renin. I don't phone you. I send you a voice note at worst, but normally it's
so
a text.
You can't right? just phone anyone. You have to message them to ask if you can phone them.
Yeah,
right.
Phone you. When last it's did true. You and I speak to each no, other on the phone? True. So we're not very different in that respect. But do you agree with most of what I said?
Yeah, with most of it. And I think what. So firstly, we hold our phones here, and I think that could explain the eye contacting. I'm used to looking at people down here and sure. not up here, and it could be like quite intimidating looking at people in the eyes because it's also quite distorted on a screen. Remember, that's their main portal to the world, mm-hmm. so things are looking different. Where I'm concerned, and I think we're at that nexus, you know, with the addition of AI in the last few years, well, ChatGPT specifically, is I think we're at the same time as when our parents changed from the slide rule to the calculator. And they thought, how on earth are our kids going to be able to think if they can't use the slide rule? And so now with ChatGPT and all the other things, is that the ability to think is going to be your ability to prompt, your ability to speak to it.
Yes.
But you
still need language for that stuff.
Yes. So prompting is the new superpower. And what's going to get really interesting, because we're only at the nascent stage of all of this. So the next step is AGI, when the machines can really think.
Yeah.
Then there's going to be trouble.
How are they doing? And I know this is probably, again, ancillary to what you actually studied in the survey and what you researched in the survey. But how are they doing in terms of relationships, personal relationships, and sex? Because I've heard they're not having any or less.
So it's
fewer sex.
No, don't talk shit, Leanne. Less. It's less. They're having less sex, and their relationships are more difficult than previous relationships between 20-somethings might have been.
Yeah. So it was out of scope of this study. But,
yeah, sure.
But I can tell you, maybe that's why there aren't any emoji on what we were talking about earlier, because they talk about it. They're on OnlyFans. They're watching plenty porn. But I think that's making them a little anxious, and they're not having as much as... They're not as sociable creatures as maybe we were.
So what's it all for, you pathetic? Wah! Come on. Like, what is that all about?
So
honestly, what's the point? I mean, what's the point of going out, for example, with someone you're interested in, and you're renting a bottle and you're going home to not have sex? I mean, it just sounds like the most awful, dystopian, ugly situation imaginable. And you're clearly not having fun because you're on your phone the whole time, so you're not even talking to the people that you're with. Sounds bad. I think we've got to find a good balance here, and I don't know what it is. I'm not saying that everything we did was right back in the day, because I think some of it was lame as fuck.
Mm.
And I think there's so much that the phone brings to our lives that's valuable. I mean, I pay for everything on it. I Uber everywhere. I order stuff. I do whatever I can and need to from a social point of view on there as well, and work. And I love it. So I'm not like some Luddite, but I really think there's a bit of the real world that has to come into your life. You have to do physical things around actual humans. Mm. And the best moments, if I think about, you know, anything, and I've got friends who are in their 20s and friends who are in their 90s. And the best things are when you're together sharing things, stories, experiences. That's the kind of stuff everybody should be doing. Can't do that on a screen.
Yeah. I think what we're learning after the COVID pandemic is that the real pandemic, or the long tail, is loneliness.
Oh, hell yeah.
So here we're living in a world that is so hyper-connected, but we've never felt so lonely.
Hell yeah.
And so the antidote is actually what you were speaking about earlier, is just looking people in the eyes and warm-blooded connection, and switching off from the virtual world, is what really creates this meaning and this connection, and it's the oxytocin moments.
So before you go, because we've got like a minute left, Chomotso says, I wonder if Gen Alpha, that's the next one, right?
Yeah.
That's the next group, is going to annoy Gen Z. Of course they will. We'll all annoy each other. I mean, our parents were annoyed by us. We'll annoy the next generation. They'll annoy the one after that. So what do we have on them? Because they're starting to become more and more voluble, loud, obvious, present.
Well, just think, this is going to worry you, because they'll be the children of millennials and the older Gen Z. So basically what you're going to get...
Yeah, fuck up.
It's like the pendulum that swings. So you're going to get... My advice is to everyone, get used to Gen Z, because Gen Alpha is going to be a more intensified version of Gen Z.
Oof. Enjoy Gen Z while they last.
Yeah, this is your practice. Wow. This is okay. This is
Gen Z. I welcome you with open arms. I'm just terrified of Gen Alpha now. Holy shit, Renan! I love what you're doing. I think this is so great. Don't forget, you can also watch what Bronwyn does with us, which is Biz Trends, also here on the Real Network, and Student Village going well.
Yeah,
you great. Guys are still the best and the biggest. You know more about these people than anyone else.
Thankfully.
And you do it better. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
No, well done.
Thank you.
Lovely to see you, dude. All right, we'll be back on Wednesday at 6 a.m. bright and early. Enjoy that while it lasts. I'm still working on getting this show down to one a week. It's coming, so just prepare yourself, all right? Don't be surprised when I announce it suddenly. It's going to happen. Get ready. There we go. On that happy note, enjoy your Monday.